And so it's almost as if in the spirit world, what Jesus is doing is he's establishing the bodily resurrection, the firstborn from the dead. And so that is a message. That's like the first message that Christ tries to establish in the resurrection. But there is another message that is also established. Because what he is doing is he is establishing his church. He's planting his church. You see, the disciples, when we move into John 21, the disciples have come to the place where they understand the cross differently than they first understood it. But it is as if they understand the cross, but they don't know what they're supposed to do. What do they do with this information? It's almost as like at this point, the disciples have no vision. It's almost as if they don't understand what the, quote, promised land looks like. And so they really can't move forward. And so what Jesus is doing in the 21st chapter of John is he's beginning to give the disciples, beginning with Simon Peter, a mission and a purpose. He's telling them what it is that they are to do, having now understood that Jesus is the resurrected Lord. And so as we begin John 21, here's where we are. The disciples are now on the Sea of Galilee. The Sea of Tiberias is what the text is going to tell us. And it's nightfall. You know, I see, it's actually seven of them. They're all the fishermen of the 12 disciples. They're on the Sea of Galilee. I see them around a fire, and they're not, it's like Jesus did tell them to go to Galilee and to wait for him. Well, they're tired of waiting. They're tired of waiting for Jesus, and they're on the Sea of Galilee. As we begin this text, see seven fishermen laying around a fire, doing nothing and trying to figure out what to do. I don't know about you, but whenever I am unsure what to do, I do the ordinary. And that's what they're going to do. They're going to do the ordinary. So John 21, verse 1, we read these words. After these things, Jesus manifested himself again to the disciples at the Sea of Tiberias. And he manifested himself in this way. Now, that very first verse is telling you something very important. When he says that he manifested himself, what the text is saying, that's a specific Greek word. And it has a meaning that what he is doing is he is revealing himself. The word has a meaning that something was not present before, and now all of a sudden it has occurred. Your NIV uses the word appeared. But the point is that this is more than just a little drop by. This is more than a little visit. This is more than going by to see your next door neighbor for a Sunday afternoon visit. This is something that is very significant. And Jesus is manifesting himself. He is revealing himself in the same way, for example, that you come into this place today. You come into this place today and it's almost like we have a choice. It's almost like we have a choice as to whether or not we're going to hear from the Lord or whether or not I'm going to put my mind on other things. I'm going to put my mind on the Orioles baseball game later this evening. It's like a manifestation is about to take place. But will you participate in that manifestation? Will you participate in that revelation? And that's how he starts the chapter. Then the second verse. Here's what the text says. Simon Peter and Thomas, called Didymus. You remember Thomas from last chapter. Thomas was not in the upper room when the disciples were waiting for Jesus when he appeared. Thomas was gone somewhere else. He was doing his own thing. And so he missed Jesus. Thomas missed Jesus. But now Thomas is here. Simon Peter and Thomas, called Didymus, and Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two others of the disciples were together. Simon Peter said to them, "I'm going fishing." Simon Peter doesn't even say, "Hey guys, come join me." Simon Peter just says, "I am going fishing." Hey Mitch, can we just not do that? Just shut it down? They're sitting around the fire. Simon Peter says, "I am going fishing." And then here's, listen to what the disciples say. They said to him, we will also come with you. You know, if we had to think just a moment about leadership, it's interesting to me. Here, Simon Peter has already denied Jesus three times. And what Simon Peter does, because he has the gift of leadership, Simon Peter just says, hey, you know what? I'm going fishing. You know, a leader is not somebody that has a title. You can have all the titles in the world, but unless you have a follower, you are not a leader. Simon Peter is a man who has just failed the Lord. And what he's doing, his leadership is so significant that what he just simply says is, I'm going fishing. And the entire group of disciples, it's probably 8 or 9 o'clock at night. It's dark. And they all decide, I'm going to go fishing. You know, it's like to me, on the one hand, when I look at the story of them going fishing on the Sea of Galilee, it's almost like there's a point that's related. And that is a point that says, who is going to follow you to your boat? Is it the right boat? Are the people that you are leading, are you leading them to the right boat? We had a baby dedication in the earlier service and it's like to me, when we dedicate a child, it's like the importance of the father in that home is just it splashes all over you. You know, statistics talk about the importance of a father's relationship to God. And it's not to minimize a mom's relationship, but it's almost as if the father is absent, if the father is the kind of dad that drops the kids off at church and then goes to the office and work, it's almost as if that in and of itself, because the father has such a role of leader, that impacts what those children will do. Parents have an impact on their children. They follow what we say. They follow what we do. And so when you, for example, find your way to the wrong boat, you find your way to the wrong place, people follow you, particularly parents. And here, Simon Peter, having denied Christ, is already at a place where the disciples are following him to a boat. Simon says, I'm going fishing. And they said to him, well, we're going to come with you. They went out and they got in the boat. That night they caught absolutely nothing. Can you relate to that? Can you relate to the fact that they have been on the Sea of Galilee and they have caught nothing all night long? When the day was breaking, Jesus stood on the beach, yet the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. You know, it's an interesting thing that what you find in each one of the resurrection appearances is this. You find Jesus standing among his disciples who he has walked with, talked with, ministered with for 3 years. Yet these disciples never recognized Jesus until a specific moment in time. Jesus is standing on the bank. It's 100 yards and they don't recognize him. Why is that? Why is it that on the Emmaus Road, two of Jesus' disciples are walking on the road and Jesus joins them? They don't recognize Jesus until he prays. And why is that the case? Because you see, when it comes to knowing God, you do not decide when you will know God. You know, we talk about making a decision for Christ, and certainly we certainly make a decision for Christ, but we need to understand that God is sovereign. God is in charge. God is the one that decides when you know who he is. It's just like a relationship you'd have with anyone. You know, you might know someone's name. You might know someone's name, but until they decide to open up to you and tell you things about themselves that are personal, something beyond the facts, you know, until they open themselves up to you, you will not be able to know them. It is the same way with a relationship with God. It reminds me of the time that my younger son, this is many years ago. On this particular Sunday, I preached a sermon on, it was either the rapture or the return of Christ, the second coming of Christ. And my youngest son, we got home from church that day, and Dave says something like this. He says, Dad, I don't want Jesus to come back yet. I said, what? He said, no, I don't want you, Jesus, to come back yet. He said, I hadn't gotten my driver's license yet. It's like he says, it's like what David's saying is, you know what? I want Jesus to come back on my time. I want Jesus to come when it's convenient for me. But what you see in this text, in many texts, is this, is that God is sovereign. The scripture says, Jesus says, no one can come to me unless the Father who sent me draws him. There is the drawing power of God that when you are at a place where you are going to receive what Christ has to say, it is that moment that a sovereign God reveals himself to you. And that's what happens in the resurrection appearances. Jesus does not reveal himself until it is time. So it says when the day was breaking, Jesus stood on the beach, yet the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. So Jesus said to them, children, you do not have any fish, do you? He said, this is how Jesus says it. He's calling from the bank. And his voice travels. He says, children, you do not have any fish, do you? That's what he says. And then what happens is there's a pregnant pause. And one of them says this. No. It's like, you know we don't have any fish. No, we don't have any fish. It's interesting to me that this is almost an identical situation to what happened in the 5th chapter of Luke. And they still, at this point, don't recognize that it is Jesus that is calling to them from the shore on the Sea of Galilee. They say, no, we don't have any fish. Jesus said, cast the net on the right-hand side of the boat. You'll find a catch. Oh, come on. If you were in that boat with these 7 disciples, what do you think that you would be thinking when he says, cast the net on the other side of the boat? Cast it on the right-hand side of the boat. Now, how long do you think it is that they've been fishing? All night. So if they started fishing at 9 o'clock at night, which is when I understand the professional fishermen go out, not like the rest of us. Professionals go out at night. So they've been fishing, let's say 9 o'clock, and now it's daybreak. So let's say it's 6 o'clock. So these guys had been fishing for every bit of what, 9 hours? Well, let me ask you a question. How many times do you think they've thrown that net on the right side of the boat? How many times do you think they've thrown it on the left side of the boat? How many times do you think they've moved the boat? You know, the last time I went fishing, and if I couldn't catch anything, what did I do? I fished at a place for maybe 30 minutes. I said, you know what? This is not where the fish are biting. I'm going where the fish are biting. So if I see someone right over there on the shore a little further up, I'm watching to see if he's catching any. Because if he's catching some, I'm going to go over there where he is. Because what a fisherman does, he goes where he thinks the fish are. So what's happened all night long? They've been throwing the net back and forth, and they caught absolutely nothing. But they do what Jesus says to do. Cast a net on the right-hand side of the boat. You'll find a catch. Ask you a question. What do you think Jesus didn't show up till 6 a.m., daybreak? You ever have times in your life where you get tired of empty nets? You ever have a time in your life where, you know, it's like, come on, Lord, are you there? I have been praying about this situation for so long. Lord, do you, can, Can you relate to an empty net? You know, I don't know about you, but I can relate to an empty net. Do you realize this morning? You know what our plan was this morning? Our plan was to take that camera and put it right here and tape just like we're going to tape for Columbia. But guess what? Dennis is sick. We had to shut the camera down a minute ago. What do you do when your net is empty? What do you do when it just doesn't go the way it's supposed to go? Why couldn't Jesus have come at 1 o'clock in the morning? Why did he make them fish all night long and have an empty net all night long? Why couldn't Jesus have come at 2 o'clock in the morning? Why was it that Jesus waited all the way until 6 a.m. in the morning, daybreak, and finally he shows up? Why does he do that? You know, think about it for a minute. Let's suppose those professional fishermen, 9 o'clock at night, they throw the net out at 10. No fish. Simon says, "Hey, remember where we caught that big catch of fish when Jesus was with us? Out here in the deep water?" Suppose Simon says, "Let's go where we caught those fish." And then they catch all those fish because Simon Peter puts them at that spot. You know what these disciples are going to be doing? They're going to think that they're a bunch of great fishermen because they caught all these fish. How do you think God teaches us to wait on him? How do you think God teaches us that he can be trusted? How do you think that God teaches us that when struggle comes into our lives, how do you think that God teaches us that when struggle comes into our lives, that he is still present? How does he do that? He does it just like he's doing here. He waits until they are at the end of their rope. You know, I just speak about my own self personally. It's so interesting to me because when I went to college, I was filled with the Spirit of the Lord. I can remember talking to how significant this is to me. I can remember talking to a friend, and she told me that when I went to college, I would not be following the Lord. I said, "That baloney. Yes, I will. I will follow the Lord in college." You know what I learned in college? I was just like everybody else. And I stumbled. And you know when the Lord reached me? When I hit the bottom of the pit. It was almost as if I was unreachable until my nets were empty. What do you do when your nets are empty? What do you do with that? You know, it's like, number one, Jesus needs to make sure that we know that he can do it. And Jesus needs to get us to a place, to help us get to a place where we can trust him so we can see him, so we can experience him. So what do you do in the meantime? You know what these disciples did in the meantime? They kept throwing the net out. This is a story that says to the church, don't ever stop fishing for men. This is a story that says to the church, don't give in until Jesus tells you to throw the net on the other side, or Jesus says, grieve this loss. This is a story that says you can wait on God. And keep waiting and keep trusting and keep fishing until he tells you otherwise. And what is he doing in this specific story? See, is this really about catching fish? Or is this something else that is going on? Let me ask you a question. Why couldn't Jesus have done this way? Why did he choose a specific catch of fish? Okay? Why did Jesus do that? Because in terms of a miracle, there were lots of miracles that Jesus did. For example, why didn't Jesus do this? Why didn't, in the middle of the night, about 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, why didn't Jesus walk on water to the boat? And why didn't Jesus say, hey guys, come on, you walk on water with me. Let's all 8 of us walk on water all the way back to the shore. Because that's a pretty big miracle to walk on water. Why didn't Jesus do that? Or why didn't Jesus, for example, feed 5,000 people again? Or, you know, why didn't he have a healing convention? Why did Jesus do this specific miracle? Why did he do that? 153 fish is what the text says that he caught. Why did Jesus do it that way? I'll tell you why he did that. See, because there's a man in the boat named Simon. And there's a total of seven men in that boat. And they don't have any vision yet. You see, it's interesting because on the one hand, when it comes to vision, if you think about Simon Peter, is a man, he betrayed Christ. And so somehow what Jesus has got to do, he's got to turn his head. Somehow he's got to get Simon Peter so he's thinking about not so much his failure, but what Jesus has got to do with Simon Peter is the same thing I think Jesus needs to do with our church, with the church. It's like what Jesus has to do is he has to give you a witness. Jesus has to give Simon Peter a witness. He has to give you a purpose. He has to give me a purpose. He has to give me something that will cause me to tell someone about what the mission's all about. It's interesting to me because in the 26th chapter of Acts, when the Apostle Paul recounts his experience on the Damascus Road, I want you to listen to what the Apostle Paul says to King Agrippa as he's quoting what Christ said to him on the Damascus Road. He says in verse 16 of Acts 26, says, this is Jesus. Paul is recounting Jesus' words. But get up and stand on your feet, Paul. For this purpose I have appeared to you, to appoint you a minister and a witness, not only to the things which you have seen, but also to the things in which I will appear to you, rescuing you from the Jewish people and from the Gentiles, to whom I am sending you, to open their eyes so that they may turn from darkness to light and from the dominion of Satan to God, that they may receive forgiveness of sins and an inheritance among those who have been sanctified by faith in me. What does Jesus have to do with the Apostle Paul? He has to do with the Apostle Paul the same thing he needs to do with Simon Peter. He's got to give Simon Peter a witness. He's got to give Simon Peter a purpose. He's got to give Simon Peter a mission. He's got to get Simon Peter to the place where he realizes that what his role is he's no longer a professional fisherman. What Simon Peter is now is he is a fisher of men. And it's like the disciples, they've come to understand what the cross is, but they've yet to come to the place in their lives where they really take ownership in the purpose and the mission and the call of God upon their lives. This is a story. This is a text that Jesus Christ uses to reprogram, to transform Simon Peter's mind and heart. The reason why it's the same story on the Sea of Galilee is because Simon Peter was saved in Luke 5 at a catch of fish just like this. Exactly like this. It's the same sea. It's in all likelihood the same boat. It's in all likelihood the same general area of the Sea of Galilee. In all likelihood, it's the same seven men that were with Simon Peter. And do you know what happened to Simon Peter? You know what happens to Simon Peter in Luke 5 when Jesus, when he has such a catch of fish? What the text says that Jesus comes to Simon Peter and says, Simon Peter, take me out for a fish. Take me out to catch some fish. You know what Simon Peter says to Jesus? He says, Jesus, we fished all night long and have not caught a single thing. But at your word, we will let down the nets. They go out to the Sea of Galilee and they catch so many fish that the nets begin to break. The boat begins to sink. They have to call their partners to come and help them with the catch of fish. Why did Jesus use the exact same miracle? Because Jesus is trying to transform Simon Peter's heart. And do you know what Simon Peter did the first miracle, the catch of fish? You know what the text says Simon Peter did? It says that when Jesus caught the fish, with a great catch of fish, what Simon Peter does is he falls to his knees and he says to Jesus, he says, depart from me, for I am a sinner. Do you see what is happening now? In this text, what happens is Simon Peter is no longer falling to his knees. What the text says is this. It says Jesus says in verse 6, cast the net on the right-hand side of the boat and you will find a cast. So they cast. And then they were not able to haul it in because of the great number of fish. Therefore, that disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, it is the Lord. So when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put his outer garment on, for he was stripped for work, and he threw himself into the sea. The other disciples came in the little boat, for they were not far from the land, but about 100 yards away, dragging the net full of fish, so that when they got out of the on the land, they saw a charcoal fire already laid and fish placed on it. And Jesus said, bring some of the fish which you have caught. Jesus didn't even need their fish. It's not about catching fish. You know what Simon Peter does? Says he throws himself into the sea. Let me ask you a question. What would you have done that night when Simon said, I'm going fishing? You know, I think I probably would have done 9 o'clock. I'd have said, you know, Simon, it's getting near my bedtime. I don't think so. I don't. Now, Simon, I think you go ahead. I'll watch you catch from the shore. I'll watch you catch them. You can show them to me when you get back. Because you know what? I don't think I want to get in that boat. It's late. It's dark. It's cold. The wind. You know what? You might have a bad storm, Simon. I don't want to be out on the Sea of Galilee tonight with a bad storm blowing up. It's just dangerous. If it's okay with you, I think I'll just stay right here by the fire where it's warm. It's warm right here by the fire. And you know what? I've been traveling with Jesus for 3 years and I'm tired of traveling with Jesus. I think I'm just going to take my ease. I don't think I'm going to get in the boat. See, it's like, there's so many different places you can be in this text. Number one, you can be on the shore and you can be watching everybody else. When it comes to the call of the Lord on our lives, you can be on the shore watching what everybody else is doing. Maybe it's because you say, well, you know what? I don't know, Pastor. I'm just depressed and anxious and I just can't handle it. Maybe you say, well, you know, I'm just getting older. I've been there, done that. Maybe you say, I'm too young. You know, I got a wife. I got this, got that. No, I can't do it. You know, I'm going to stand here, watch on the shore. You're going to be on the shore. You're going to be on the boat. See, that's the first question. Why? What? It's like, what, you know what Columbia is? You know what Columbia is? I've had people this week in my office, one after the other, talking to me about what they can do. Wanting to know what they can do. You want to be on the shore, you want to be on the boat. Because in the boat, how many fishermen we have in here? Raise your hand if you've been fishing before. Anybody here ever caught a fish? Raise your hand. Tell me something. There is nothing like holding a line and a fish pulling on the other end. There is nothing like that. You feel that fish. Oh, it's nothing like that. Nothing like it. Well, let me ask you. You want to hold the line? Or you want to watch somebody else? You want to stand on the shore? You want to get in the boat? You see, the call here, the call is to get in the boat. To be a part of the catch. I don't know about you, but that is exciting to me. It's absolutely exciting. And Simon Peter, oh, it's so beautiful. Simon Peter, the text says, throws himself into the sea. There's 100-yard distance. You're going to be the one who is thrashing, trying to get to Jesus. There ain't nothing going to stop me. Simon Peter is absolutely dying to reach Jesus. I have found that when someone decides they're going to press into Jesus, empty nets. I'm going to keep throwing that net out, Pastor, but I'll tell you one thing. I'm coming to Jesus. That's what Simon Peter's doing. And the people in the boat, you know what? Here's the thing I've also found. Somebody's got to pull the nets. The only person that misses out is the one who's still standing on the bank. And as a church, let me ask you a question. Why do you think it took us 3 tries to find Columbia? Isn't that sort of like putting the nets over here, then throw them on the right side, we throw them on the left side, we throw them on the right side, so that we finally throw the nets where God says, throw them. We don't have to worry about who is really throwing the nets. It's got nothing to do about a pastor. It's got nothing to do about a leadership team. It has absolutely everything to do with receiving and responding to the word of the Lord and just keep throwing, keep fishing, keep doing. Until he opens the door. It's interesting to me that everybody's in the boat. All of them are in the boat. In spite of the fact that I guarantee you, some didn't want to go. It's also interesting that they needed all 7 to pull together to bring the nets in. That's how many fish it was. I'm telling you, that's what God's saying to us. Some of us are going to be like Simon Peter. I saw that this past week. Can't wait to tell you about that. I can't tell you now. I can't wait to tell you about the people that are jumping out of the boat, doing all they can. I can't wait to tell you about the people who are in there pulling the fish in. Because you know what? It's like that camera's broken. You know what that says to me? You know, in Luke chapter 5, you know what happened? The net started breaking. The boat started sinking. And in this story, you know what happens? Disciples see the nets and they're not breaking. That doesn't compute to them. You see, what I found is there are times in our lives when it just seems like we don't quite have enough. But then there are other times when God is in absolute control and the timing is right and this is something that he is doing. And you know what? What breaks doesn't stop what God's going to do because God is in control. The net's not breaking. It's simply God saying he's in control.
Father, I know that you're calling this church. You're calling each one of us individually. I first pray, Father, that as a people, that we would accept your appointment. We would accept, oh Father, what you're calling us to do. And the marvel, Father, is that when we serve you, we participate in what you're doing in the lives of people, you change us first. You set us on fire for you. And then, oh Father, as we are on fire for you and as we are pressing into Jesus, we influence others. Others follow us. It is my prayer, oh God, that first our distractions would not influence others to be likewise distracted, whether it's our children, whether it's our co-workers. It's my prayer, oh Father, that the distractions, when we are distracted, would only be for us, would have no influence on others. But I pray that we would not be distracted. I pray that we, oh God, would get in the boat with you. That we would seek, oh Father, to declare your will, your word, and your message to the community that you have placed us in. I pray, oh Father, when it seems as though the nets are empty, I pray that we would just keep fishing. We keep throwing them to the right and we'd throw them to the left. Because you are worth that, oh Father. The cross reveals that to us. And I am so grateful that you are in control. So will you bless us, Father, as we seek to serve you. In the marvelous name of Christ, I pray. Amen. Our musicians are going to come forward now, and I'll be here to receive you as God is directing you. Perhaps God has spoken to you in some way. Perhaps God has invited you to join him in the boat. How could you do that? When we begin to sing, make your way to the front of the church and simply kneel and tell him you've heard him. Tell him you want to be a part of what he is going to do in your life and in the lives of others. And as he responds to you, may he respond to others. May you follow him and may we honor him in our response. You come as we begin to stand and sing.